scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
Starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Okay, let's get this hour of Flames Talk underway. It's a Friday, October 11th, as we welcome you to the Scotiabank Saddledome. Steinberg along with you here at the Hot Stove Lounge downstairs. And boy, we've got a lot to talk about this hour on the program. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's a Friday, which means it's time for the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta, live thoroughbred racing. Racing's back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. And Eric joins us now from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca, as he does for the full hour every Friday here on the Eric Francis Hour. Hello, Mr. Francis. How are we doing?
Fantastic, my friend. It's another beautiful fall day. We got hockey going. Life's good. And last time when we spoke, we had so many questions, and they were all answered game one, weren't they? Were they all answered about this game?
I think we know everything. I think we know exactly how the next 81 games are going to go, right?
Yeah, no surprises at all, right? It was just a straightforward way to open the hockey season with another ho-hum hockey game. You know what? 28 years I covered this league, don't remember a game that wacky in my life. Just can't. I'm sure there were. But I can't think of one. Like, just, wasn't that something? I mean, when it was all said and done and it was time to write my column, I'm like, oh my gosh, where do I even start?
Well, that for me, so that was 28 for you. That was my 16th season opener in terms of covering this team full time, which actually is bonkers. Like, that's an entire human that can get a driver's license. So it was number 16 for me covering this team full time, and I can't remember a season opener, without question, can't remember a season opener that was that bonkers. And honestly, and you were there, you were in the middle of it in Vancouver. But honestly, I even watching on our, we have a pretty cool direct feed that gives a pretty good feel of the atmosphere that you're there. I can't remember very many games quite like that I've covered over the last 15 plus seasons. Like, that was as bonkers a game. Like, I could probably put five or six that are that memorable for me or in the same category, but definitely none of them to start a season. Like, that was awesome.
Awesome is a great word for it. And of course, it didn't look like it was going to be awesome 20 minutes in. And, you know, I mean, think 20 minutes in, I'm pretty sure everybody thought, wow, the sky is falling like all the people predicted. And anyway, it's one game. But here's what my takeaway was. There were so many, I guess. But my biggest takeaway was, and I thought about this as the game was going on, is where do these guys get the chutzpah? Where do they get the gall? Where do they get the gumption to...
You can use the B word. Like, I'm pretty sure that's okay.
Yeah.
Where'd they get the balls? I know what you're trying to say.
How do they summon up this sort of self-belief given the circumstance, you know, given how many players left last year? I know that's old news, but, you know, the world is saying these guys can't make the playoffs. I'm with them. I do not think they can make the playoffs, but I think that they're going to be a lot better than people think. Still, there was no basis to me on which they could say, hey, guys, we're down 4-1 in one of the most hostile environments in the league. I will say that. Like, opening night in any building is always pretty daunting, but especially in that building where they think that, you know, the sky's the limit for their team. It's a pretty raucous slash obnoxious building to be in anyway. And to be down weathering that storm 4-1 that early on, And to somehow have anyone in there thinking, you know, we can come back. Like, where does that come from? Like, I guess every hockey player really, No, I don't buy that. I don't believe every hockey player believes that they can always come back in any game they're ever in. That's not true of athletes. None of this is a criticism of them. It is the ultimate compliment. Like, guys, you shouldn't have been able to do this. No one thought you could do this, and you did it. Wow. What can this do for the team moving forward? I don't know. It's just one game. I get it. But in terms of starters, you probably couldn't have asked for much more in terms of the way it ended. Not the way it started, but the way you bounced back and you handled that early adversity. That is a huge feather in the cap of this leadership group,
yeah,
coaching staff, and every guy on this team. Like, again, I don't know where it's going from here, but wow, I saw a lot there that really impressed me that night.
Well, and if it doesn't start the way it does, it doesn't end the way it does. Okay, well, thanks, genius. And I'm not trying to, I'm not trying to give you a Sherlock Holmes moment here. But if it doesn't, if the Kevin Rooney, JT Miller situation doesn't happen, and if the Flames don't lose their composure for 7 or 8 minutes there and get into penalty trouble, and if the Canucks don't take that 4-1 lead and, you know, start to maybe let off the gas a little bit and allow the Flames to get to their game, if none of this happens, the craziness and the spirited comeback doesn't happen. But I want to echo one thing that I think is really important. Like, you use the term, where do these guys get off playing with that much confidence? But, you know, it really does kind of the entire theme that we've heard of training camp right from day one, where we heard Nazem Kadri say, hey, let's pump the brakes here. Like, we haven't even started. We haven't even played a game. Let's not be talking about this stuff. Give us a chance to start playing. And you know, to hear Jonathan Huberdeau and Michael Backlund, or even a couple of days ago, Nazem Kadri talk about, you know what, there's some sneaky talent in here. Like, there's whether they want to admit that they're Rasmus Anderson, we don't care what you guys write, all that type of stuff. You know, they may not want to admit that they hear or see things on the outside, and maybe a lot of guys do a good job of blocking it out, but there's definitely a acknowledgement, there's definitely a realization inside that room that, okay, people are writing us off. People on the outside don't see us being very good. Let's go ram it down some throats. And that's kind of that's one of the themes that I saw even play itself out on the ice on Wednesday night. Like, they played with a little bit of swagger. They played with a little anger. They played with a little attitude. And I loved it. Whether it was Ryan Lomberg chirping at people from the bench, which you could hear on our feed, it was picked up crystal clear. Whether it was Rasmus Anderson staring somebody down after scoring that goal, whether it was Anthony Mantha celebrating the way he did. I don't know, Francis. I just there was some good attitude the Flames brought to the table on Wednesday night, and I thought that was I think that's a really important thing for them to think about bringing to the table going forward. I think that's going to be something that can drive them for a lot of games this year.
Yeah, I mean, it sure, you couldn't have asked for more in terms of just the way it all unfolded, and for you to come away with 2 points in that environment under those circumstances, and to do it as dramatically as they did. Like, I just, wow. I think we'll be talking about that game for a while in terms of how it set the standard, or at least set the tone for the season. And, you know, we haven't spoken since, you know, last week, of course, but, you know, I'd written a column the night before the game, or the day of the game, with Michael Backlund talking, endlessly about 2014, 2015, the comeback group, you know, that, you know, and how they were in almost a similar situation. He kept drawing the parallels between that team and this year's team. And just to give people a little bit of background, like, that 2014-15 team, that was Johnny Gaudreau's first year in the NHL. That was Sam Bennett's first year, although he was basically hurt the whole year until the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And it was Sean Monahan's second year. And Backlund wasn't going and trying to draw parallels between, okay, maybe Sam Hanzak could be the next Johnny Gaudreau. He wasn't doing that at all, and no one's going to do that. He was, though, looking at, guy, you know, hey, it was the second year for Sean Monahan, and he had an incredible year with Johnny Gaudreau. It's the second year here for Pospisil and Zeri. Who knows how they're going to, you know, continue to progress. But it was mostly just the whole world that said, no, you got too many youngsters, there's too many unknowns, you're not going to be good enough. No one even knows who your starting goalie is going to be. You had three of them at the time. Everyone remembers that part. But they ended up winning the first. Not only did they make the playoffs, and they did it in a year in which their captain, Mark Giordano, had a torn biceps right before the trade deadline. They just got set back after set back. The team was selling guys at the deadline.
Traded away Curtis Glencross that year.
That's right. Yeah, he was one of their better players. They traded him away to Washington. They just dealt with so much adversity, and they still made the playoffs, and they won a series against Vancouver, incidentally. So he just keeps saying, look, I remember that feeling, and I'm getting that same feeling now. It's a similar scenario, and I'm also getting us against the world vibe. And anyway, again, some people are listening going, boys, slow down. It's one game. For sure. But that's all we can talk about right now, and that's all they've got to show for all this prep and talk heading into the season, and that's how they respond. And I was getting into the elevator after the game. I'm waiting for the elevator in Vancouver. Craig Conroy saddles up next to me, and he's got this grin on his face, almost sheepish. You know the look. And he's almost like, oh, my God, I cannot believe what I just saw, and I cannot believe what just happened. But anyway, he didn't say that. All he said to me, he goes, it looks like it's the comeback kids all over again. And that's kind of what they were referred to, 10 years ago. And one game in, that's what they did. So anyway, full marks for entertainment. And the last thing about that is just, I've said all along to people, even if they don't make the playoffs, even if there are a few more sell-offs this year, even if, things go the way a lot of people think they're going to go this year, I still think they're, is a ton of intrigue to follow with this team. And, and I think there's a lot of entertainment that we're going to have this year. Rebuilds, retools, revamps don't necessarily mean, pack it in. There's nothing to see here. As a matter of fact, I think in some cases there's even more to see when there's so many unknowns and you're building. So that was our first taste of it on Wednesday. Boy, was that fun.
It really was. It's Eric Francis, the Eric Francis Hour here on Flames Talk. Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. What do you want to get into? Because there's so much to get into. It all started with the JT Miller hit on Kevin Rooney, and there is so much that went into that, right? I still don't like the hit. And I've even heard Blake Coleman and Anthony Mantha say that, it wasn't a cheap shot. And, it was. I still don't like the hit. I still thought it was a little bit of a reckless play, and it ended up hurting a guy and has put Kevin Rooney on the shelf for at least a week here with an upper body injury. And I know that you made mention of and got a couple of really good quotes about Canucks fans chanting JT Miller's name as Kevin Rooney is on the ice getting attention. Ended two by two and three trainers. That's what got the emotional temperature from, it's the season opener, we're playing for real, it's two arch rivals, all of that type of stuff. And then you crank the emotion or the temperature up by another 10-11 by that whole situation.
Well, when I went to the dressing room after the game, I was curious to see what the guys were going to be talking about a lot. I was surprised how many guys were talking about the Gordie Howe hat trick by Anthony Mantha, but it was a huge part of it. Don't get me wrong. I pulled Connor Zeri aside after he did his media scrum, and I just wanted to ask him a few other questions. And that's when you may have seen the quote in my piece where he said, it pissed the guys off to hear them chanting JT Miller, while Rooney's out there and they're bringing a stretcher onto the ice, he's clearly unconscious, convulsing on the, it was one of those ugly scenes. And they're screaming, JT Miller, didn't sit well with, I don't think, anybody. I think there were even Vancouver scribes who I was talking to in the intermission going, that was pretty classless. That wasn't cool. You don't do that. You just don't do that. I get it. It's opening night. They love their JT Miller. I think they should love JT Miller for a lot of reasons. But just come on, guys. Show a little decorum. And that's not what that market's known for, decorum. So not surprising, I guess. And sorry, these little cheap shots are coming out here, but it's pretty, well, come on. I mean, am I breaking news here that the Vancouver Canuck fans are, considered? Anyway, we will proceed.
Well done. Very political. Very political. I like it.
There you go.
And no, you're not.
Like, you know, I'm not.
And no, you're not.
Here to stir it up, but Jesus, like it was a classless moment, and that's the whole hockey world would agree. So, but to hear Zary say after the game, this guy, that really pissed the guys off. Like, that is not a good thing to hear. He kind of, he was politically correct about it too, but made it very clear that they heard that. It was a very emotional time, and they probably didn't react, you know, the way they would like to it down the road. Of course, they stepped up and they wanted to get their piece of flesh right away, but it got the best of them, and it really should have cost them the whole game. They turn it around. But for him to say that that was a source of kind of inspiration was interesting to me. Another thing I think should be pointed out, because I talked to Michael Backlund away from all the other microphones, and I said, like, what were you thinking on your shot, right? On your shot at the empty net. And of course, it wasn't trying to be critical, but, like, first of all, how much did your heart sink when he stopped it and then they put it in the net 10 seconds later? But also, like, what did you see? He said, I was trying to put it between Quinn Hughes' legs, but I shot it too high. And if you look at the replay, you can see exactly that. It hits Quinn Hughes in the pants, and next thing you know, it's in their net. Like, can you imagine the sinking feeling for the captain of the team who was, you know, a couple inches over, and this game's over, and he, anyway.
He won it in regulation.
So he was extremely relieved that they ended up still getting the 2 points, and he didn't cost them a point. Anyway, it was, there were a lot of things that these guys were saying after the game that kind of shed some real insight on just how powerful a moment that Rooney situation was. Like, guys were, and I get it, when your guy's in distress, and it was scary, for a minute or so there, there's a lot of things that were going through those guys' heads. So they responded the right way, I think, in terms of emotion, but maybe they went overboard. They ended up drawing two bad penalties out of it. Mm-hmm. And it should have cost them the game, quite frankly. But again, good on them. I know I'm kind of bouncing all over the place, but, like, that's the way the game was. When I was trying to write the column, I'm like, oh my God, I got to write something in there about how Vladar, like, you know, yeah, at the end of the night, the record shows Dan Vladar let in 5 goals. I defy you to show me one where you're like, geez, that was a terrible goal. I mean, a lot of them were just blown coverages, if you ask me, or simply power play goals that were really well executed. But the point that I guess I wanted to make about Vladar was, 5 goals, but I thought he made some damn good saves along the way. He made 20 saves. It's not a ton, but there were a bunch of really tough ones that he made where that game could have been over. It reminded me of, you know, the old saying they used to say all the time about Grant Fuhr, like, Grant's going to let in 5, but he's never going to let in that 6th goal. And it gives you a chance to win the game. And, you know, sure enough, if any one of those other ones go in, then the game is out of sight. So I thought Vladar deserved full marks. I don't know if they're going to go back with him. I think that you base your next goaltending decision based on who you want to face Edmonton on Sunday more so. But I don't know. I'm throwing a lot at you. I guess the first thing I want to kind of hear from you is, but who would you start Saturday? And then, you know, I'd love to hear your reaction on some of the other things I was saying.
Well, I definitely, one of the things I on the postgame show on Wednesday night, I said this, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday as well. I'm fully with you on Dan's game. I thought at 4-1, it's kind of hard to put any of the deficit on your goaltender, because you had two, essentially three, power play goals. The Sprong goal is screened and I think might have deflected off of Kadri. The first Besser goal to make it 2-0 is a set play that Vancouver runs perfectly, and they ran it perfectly. The third goal, the Garland goal, he loses his mask, which they called it correctly. Like, it was the right call. They couldn't blow it dead on the rule book, but, you know, if you're a goalie and you get 100-mile-an-hour slap shots thrown at you on a nightly basis and you lose the thing that protects your head, you're going to
freeze. I've never played goal in the NHL, but I can tell you most humans are going to freeze when their mask comes off. So he froze, and it probably cost him a half second or a second to get over and make a save. And so now it's 3-0, and then the second Besser goal to make it 4-1 was, again, that perfectly executed down low to the slot opportunity, and it's 4-1 just like that. The only one, and there's not a single bad goal in there in my eyes, the only one that you could maybe be like, oh, you know, it could have, maybe it might have been good to have a save there. The only one that I can think of is the game-tying goal from Miller because it comes from a spot that isn't quote-unquote high danger. It's from the left half boards, but he absolutely killed that puck, and he's one of the best shots in the league. So I came away, I am so with you on Vladar that at 4-1 and at 4-2, so throughout the entire second period and especially in the third, before Pospisil scored and after Pospisil scored, a couple of really key saves from Vladar to make it to the Flames still had an opportunity to get back in this game, which, of course, they eventually did. So I'm with you 100%. All that being said, I'd still go Wolf in the home opener. I just think you've got two, and you got to play two, and you've got the back-to-back on Sunday. We know that Vladar has played decently well in Edmonton before. Why not go Wolf against the Flyers and right back to Dan on Sunday against the Oilers?
Yeah, I like it. I like it, and he's the people's choice too, and that's not part of the decision-making, I know, but it kind of works out nicely, you know, on a home opener. Everyone did kind of, when the day they traded Jacob Markstrom, I think everyone would have thought, okay, well, when they open the season at home, it's going to be Wolf in the net. Well, doesn't necessarily mean he's the starting goalie, but I think that people envision that that would be the case. So, yeah, I've got no qualms with that. And it's not an indictment. If anything, it's rewarding Vladar saying, we want you against Edmonton. And so we're going to play Wolf against Philadelphia. So I could definitely see them going that direction. But, you know, in this market, I think we've pretty much given up trying to figure out who's starting when. It was especially hard when Daryl Sutter was the head coach.
Yes.
I'm not sure, you know, we'll be any further ahead in terms of what this coach is going to be thinking, although he's a very good communicator, but he's always also made it very clear he will not be announcing his goalies ahead of time. He tells them one day ahead of time and nobody else. So
yep.
We'll find out. It'll be a pleasant surprise either way.
Just quickly before we pause, and we haven't spoken much about Anthony Mantha, who deserves a ton of airtime, and we'll get to that after we pause, because it really was a fascinating debut for Mantha as a member of the Flames. But just a quick thought on Zeri. Like, how about, and I know that Pospisil was a big part of that goal happening too, but how about the chutzpah from Connor Zeri to win the game the way that he did? Like, that, for a guy that was one of the stories of last year, and for a guy that we're all wondering, oh, is Connor Zeri, who had this great rookie season, is he gonna run into that sophomore slump? And we have no idea, but on night one, he looked dangerous, he looked engaged, and he scored an absolutely gorgeous overtime winner with a little assist to Pospisil as he drove the net.
Oh, my God. Like, the first thing that occurred to me, like, I don't know, 20 seconds before the goal went in was, oh, my God, all three guys out there for the winning goal were all guys that were not with this organization, well, that were not with this team a year ago. Pospisil, Zeri, and Miramanov. Like, I'm not sure I would have guessed that those three would ever be on the ice in overtime.
Yeah.
On your third shift. But, you know, I asked Huska about that afterwards. Like I said, boy, that's almost symbolic to me that a year ago, these guys weren't in the opening night lineup. One of them wasn't even with the organization. The other two were in the minors. Like, is that almost symbolic that you had the confidence to go with them? He said, no. He said, it's interesting you point that out, Eric. I hadn't thought of that, but he said, it's also because we had overplayed the hell out of everybody all game long, and just the way the game went, because they were short of forward and they were double shifting centermen. And he just said, it was just the way it was going. That's all it was. So he said there was no rhyme or reason behind it. But yeah, that goal, when people talk about Connor Zeri, they talk about him playing a possession game. He likes to control the puck and have the puck on his stick. Like, that's a classic example of it, of how he always seems to take that extra second or two with the puck that most players don't. And that was an example of it. You're like, he's not going to try to, oh, my God, he hit, oh, my God. And then next thing you know, it's in the back of the net. And you're so right. Martin Pospisil deserves, you know, equal credit for how that goal went in the net. And when Zeri was, I asked him to try and describe, you know, what he just did or what he saw. And he said it was all because he saw the speed Pospisil was using to draw the defenders over. When he saw the one defender open his hips, Filip Ronek opened his hips to kind of compensate where, you know, or accommodate, I don't know what the word is, but he saw Pospisil coming, and that's when Zeri decided to make that move. But, yeah, an incredible, incredible finish. Like, there aren't many, you know, when this season's over, that may end up being one of the more memorable goals we see all season long because of the dramatic, you know, effect it had on the game, just the way he scored it. I mean, that is a goal scorer's goal, and that is that seemed to me more like a veteran's goal. Or in today's NHL, is that more of a young man's goal because he's just like, let's just try this because that's what young guys do. We try stuff and we see if it works. And boy, it worked in spectacular fashion.
Did it ever? If I'm Seelovs between the pipes, and I see Martin Pospisil, who is not a small man. Like, he's not huge, but he's not a small man.
No.
And he beelined towards Seelovs, and you could tell that Seelovs was like, WTF, what is this guy going to do? Is this guy going to run me? Is he going to bowl me over? And he made a perfect cut, didn't touch Seelovs, and just kind of buzzed the crease, but it did enough to throw Seelovs off that, and Zeri had already deked Ronek out of his equipment, and now Seelovs is all discombobulated because of Pospisil, and next thing you know, it's game over, overtime winner. Like, it was some sequence, man.
And there was a bit of a snow shower there, not the kind that would draw a penalty or anything, but, you know, I watched it over and over again, and Pospisil puts on the brakes right in front of him, and quite a lot of snow goes all over Seelovs, not in his face or anything, and not the kind of thing, like I said, would be get you a penalty, but oh my God, like, you're right, that had to be tremendously distracting for Seelovs, and something that Zeri had the wherewithal to use to his advantage. And
100%.
It also just goes to show you, right? And it also, so that's a veteran move in itself, and it also goes to show you that, like, Pospisil has always been told, we want you going in straight lines, we want you getting into the zone as quickly as you can in every circumstance, and we want you using that speed and size of yours. And he put all those together in one crazy rush up the ice when he didn't even have the puck. Like, it probably no one paid attention to it until afterwards. We're looking at it going, and Zeri was the first to give him credit for it. And you think, yeah, that was a huge part of that game-winning goal. And that's, I don't think it'll be the last two times those two revelations from last year are going to factor in heavily in a game this year. It's just pretty impressive.
And it's time to get to Anthony Mantha, which we will do because he had an unbelievable debut as a member of the Calgary Flames. We're underway this hour on Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. It's the Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
And it's the Eric Francis Hour on this Friday with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. It's Pat Steinberg along with you. Happy Friday. And what a Wednesday to start off the Flames career for Anthony Mantha, Eric. Like the Gordie Howe hat trick. The highlight reel goal, he was very zealous in trying to get JT Miller to answer the bell on Wednesday. Like, just
all things considered, for a guy that is, you know, one of the bigger free agent acquisitions the Flames made this summer, but also a guy that, you know, has been somewhat of a hot button for a lot of Flames fans, that was a pretty good way to endear yourself to teammates, to endear yourself to fans. That's a heck of a start to a Flames career, hey?
Yeah, I think so, and I think that, listen, you monitor, you know, on the fan feedback line and on social media a whole lot more than I ever would. But my sense is from the day he was signed that this was not a popular signing. Do I have that somewhat right?
I would say that there's definitely a faction of Flames fans who were like, well, why sign a veteran winger? We've got so many young guys. You don't want to have the path for young player A or young player B blocked by an older player. There was some of that after the signing, and certainly as training camp was going on, you heard some of that as well.
And you also heard it when Pelche went on waivers, and people are like, wait a second, like, Mantha did nothing in camp, and, you know, why are we risking losing an asset when Mantha's done nothing in camp? Like, I'm not saying it was fair criticism, but it's some of the things I was hearing. And, you know, I think everyone's on board that, or everyone understands that the rationale behind signing him was simply to give somebody who potentially could match with Jonathan Huberdeau. That's 100% why he's here.
Yep.
And he wasn't brought in to be a fighter, that's for sure. Although I have to tell you, after, you know, he'd kind of saying in when his interviews, and I thought he came across as a very affable guy. Like, I'm wondering if that performance combined with the fact that I think, you know, he was pretty self-deprecating, humble.
Yeah.
The day after, talking about, oh, I'm the least tough guy on the team, and I told JT Miller he should probably fight me because I'm the least toughest guy on the roster. Like, I kind of thought it all played really well. And he said, I've fought a few times, but I'm not the guy you want doing that. I don't like doing it. He's fought 35 times. I looked it up because he lost that fight so significantly to me. I immediately looked up, like, how many times has he fought in his life? 35. Wow. Like, I think a lot of that is because he's 6'5", 235 pounds. And when that happens, you almost have to fight sometimes. People are going to go looking for you. I've seen colleagues describe him as a power forward, and I vehemently disagree with that description. He's a guy who I think everybody has wanted him to be a power forward and to use that size. But I think that that's partly been part of why he's only scored 20 goals three times, is because I don't think he's used that size the way organizations have wanted him to. I've read about that. I've heard about that in the past. Mm-hmm. Either way, that's all in the past. He went and used his size properly the other night in terms of, you know, trying to step up for a teammate. You know, the fight didn't go that well, but it did calm things down. And the coach said that afterwards. He goes, you know, like, that kind of everything, all the stupidness ended after that. And we just got down to playing our game. So good on him for kind of changing that narrative. And, hey, that was a goal scorer's goal, that finish on the
majority.
And it came at a pretty good time, too, because – I can only imagine all the detractors, all the people who didn't want him signed, all the people who said he's too old, all the people who said you're throwing, you know, good money at bad by trying to get someone for Huberdeau, all the people who thought that he was eating up a roster spot a young guy should have, probably were losing their mind when he took the dumb penalty trying to get Miller to fight him in the first place. But then he steps on the ice and he gets a short-handed goal immediately after serving his penalty, and it just changed the complexion of Anthony Mantha in a heartbeat. You know, I don't know what people are going to think later this year, and I think the organization, it'll be fascinating to see how he does mesh with Huberdeau.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought they had a pretty good game the other night, didn't you, with the Boston? So I thought they were snapping
I thought got better as the night went along, and I thought by the third period they really started to have an impact on the game.
Yeah. Huberdeau was playing with a real, you know, hitch in his step. And I think that, you know, there's going to be a very interesting decision that's going to have to be made. What if he has a really great season and he does help Huberdeau elevate his game?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that means he may even fetch a first rounder at the trade deadline. At the very least, probably a second rounder at the trade deadline. If he's putting together decent numbers. Last year at the trade deadline, he had 20 goals. in like 60 games. That was pretty good. So that got him that landed Washington a second and a fourth rounder from Vegas at the trade deadline. He wasn't spectacular in Vegas, but, you know, small sample size. He comes here fresh, late. You know, I just think, you know, would you dare trade him, though, if he does actually help Huberto get back to a point of game play, and he's probably part of it, would you dare send him packing? I don't know. You'd have to talk to him about what it would cost to sign him, you know, to an extension and all these other things. So anyway, he'll be a fascinating figure to look at as we move forward. Do you not think? I mean, at the trade deadline, when we're talking about decisions this organization's got to make, and I'm getting way ahead of myself with the trade deadline, but,
yeah,
you know, he will be a very interesting topic as that comes around, because his play will dictate, you know, just how tough a decision that's going to be.
Without question. And, you know, what I've said a few times is that if you're a Flames fan who is hoping for this team to go through a rebuild and you know, is really excited about the direction everything's going and, you know, wants to see this team get back to being truly competitive in a few years' time when this new building opens, all that type of stuff. If that's what is driving you as a Flames fan, well, I've got news for you. It's going to, like, when they get to where they want to be, when they get to where fans want them to be, and however long it's going to take, I'm telling you, it's going to be almost certainly with Jonathan Huberto as part of it. That contract is what it is, and that contract is huge. And there's a very slim chance that that contract gets moved. So for the Flames to be a contender again, it's going to be with Jonathan Huberto on the team. So it's in their best interest to try to get the most out of Huberto and to try to find guys who can play with him and succeed with him. Now, you're right. It's early. And to be making any type of declaration as to what it's going to be with Anthony Mantha as the guy, yeah, sure, it's one game. But if it ends up working, and if they have shown that there's a lot of chemistry, and Mantha's having a good year, and it's rubbing off on Huberto, I don't know how you at the very least can't be thinking about, you know, is it better to trade or is it better to extend it? I know that bugs a lot of people. You're like, they can't be signing players of X amount of years. You can't be signing over 30 guys to extensions and all that type of stuff. I know that feeling exists out there, but it doesn't change the fact that if you've got somebody to play with Huberto and it's working, that can't be ignored.
No. And it's 100% the reason they brought him in. And, hey, they've got all the cap space in the world right now, so it really is irrelevant. It's not that big a deal. But if it does go well, then I can't imagine Anthony Mantha would say, yeah, you know what, I'm happy just doing another one-year deal for $4 million. Like, if he meshes with Huberto, he's going to feel like he's got some bargaining power, and he's going to say, okay, well, let's, you know, if we're going to do an extension, I would imagine it's got to be 2 or 3 years at the very least. You know, maybe I'm wrong. It all depends on how his season goes, but it will be a very interesting decision for them. And listen, good start for him right now. A goal, assist, a fight. He's done that 3 times in his career, the Gordie Howe hat trick. And it's only the 6th time in NHL history that a guy did it on his debut with a new team. That's got to count for something, right? That like, try to draw me up a scenario in which it could have gone better. And I can't. I guess he could have won the fight. But other than that, I thought, you know, he did everything they could have asked him to do. Now, that said, I think he only got 1 shot on goal that night, and that's not going to cut it for Huska. He wants 3 a night. He wants some 3.5 a night to get to 300 shots a year. That was the big thing in the summer when he was talking to him. But he had another, didn't he? He was in alone on another chance, and he said he shot it about 5 feet
wide. 5 feet wide, yeah.
You know, maybe he had 2 shot attempts, but he's going to need a whole lot more if this is going to be something that works for him moving forward.
And it's a great start. And, you know, I know that you wrote about this earlier this week, and he basically said the exact same thing to Wes and I when he joined us on July 1st after signing here. Anthony is very, very aware of what the kind of what the reputation is from around the league. He's very aware of what or why he only got a one-year contract after, as you yeah. said, scoring 20 goals last year. Like, he's very eyes wide open in terms of what his situation is, and, you know, admitted to you that he knows this is a show-me contract that he's on, and he said the same thing to us on July 1st. He's like, yeah, this is a show-me contract. I've been labeled as a guy that is not consistent, and I got to start to change that narrative. And I don't know, you don't hear that a lot from pro athletes, right? Like that's a pretty revealing little piece of self-awareness from a guy.
Yeah, and I think that, as I alluded to earlier, his chat with the media after the game the other day, like the day after.
Yeah,
I think he's quite an affable guy. Like, I think, you know, if there's a chance that he could really, you know, really win some people over here in this city, it, first of all, obviously, it's got to be with his play. But I also think that, you know, people tend to give people the benefit of the doubt when they see them and they see, that guy seems like a really good guy. That's important in today's world, too, because people have access to so many interviews and video of guys and audio. I think that counts for something. And I do think he's a really likable guy. I have no doubt he's fitting into that room really well. And he might even teach Huberto some French down the road here.
Yeah,
those two guys know a little bit about each other. They're not tight, but they've skated with each other in the summers for a couple of years. And you know, if that relationship just continues to flourish on the ice, we'll be talking about them in a much different way than I think a lot of people thought we would be talking about Anthony Mantha moving forward.
Mr. Francis, before we wrap things up on this week's Eric Francis Hour, did want to give you one more chance because we are moving closer to it. I was looking at my schedule for next week, and I was plugging in who the co-hosts are going to be on Flames Talk, and I said, oh, wait a second. What's this on Thursday? We're live on location at Cowboys. What are we doing at Cowboys on Thursday? Because we're into the final stretch before the Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out 2024.
Yep, it's just around the corner. Next Thursday, if you don't have tickets and you've always wanted to go check this out, or you've always had this recurring dream that you'd be in a room with 600-700 pizzas at one time, and you could taste every single one of them if you wanted to. That's what the Pizza Pig Out is. So it's next Thursday at Cowboys. Tickets at ericfrancispizzapigout.com. It's the 22nd annual. We got this thing dialed in pretty well. There will be 500 to 700 pizzas there from all over town. I guarantee you, if you've never been, or even if you have been, you will find a new pizzeria that you never knew existed. And it might just be right around the corner from your house, or at least delivers to your house. So you may want to go. That's what it's all about, discovering that new place that just has that great pizza that you want to try. And it's all for Kidsport Calgary. So I checked after our chat last week because I thought, I should see how ticket sales are going. We are close to a sellout, which is exciting. You know, last year with Joey Chestnut, we took our attendance to a whole new level. And this year, you know, that's carried over. I guess a lot of people came, enjoyed it, and told their friends. So not a whole lot of tickets left. I would imagine probably by Tuesday or Wednesday, we will be sold out. So if people are thinking about going, you might want to just go on there right now and grab your tickets. They're not expensive. It's all you can eat all night long. So check it out. The Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out. Thanks for the chance to talk about it. And thank you guys for coming to broadcast from it. I know you have a good time when you're there.
I've never had a bad time at the Eric Francis Pizza Pig Out, and I anticipate that streak will continue in 2024. It's Thursday. The website, ericfrancispizzapigout.com. Even if you don't like pizza, lots of celebrities, lots of good times. You're at Cowboys, have a couple of drinks, hang out, and the most important part, this thing raises thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars every single year for kids'
Sport Calgary, and that's going to be the case again in 2024. Mr. Francis, I'll see you at Morning Skate on Saturday. You have yourself a wonderful rest of your Friday, though. Thank you as always, pal.
Thanks, man. And hey, just if I could just add, if you go to the website and you want to buy tickets, even if you can't go to the Pig Out or Pizza's Not Your Thing, we have signed jerseys from Dustin Wolf, Blake Coleman, Michael Backlund, George Springer. We've got this incredible silent auction, and you can bid on that even if you're not going to the Pig Out. It's right there on the site. There's a link to it. You just got to sign in, and you can buy all these sort of great experiences and products too. So help kids sport out. The goal is to raise $100,000 that night, and would if the auction does well, hopefully we can get there. So thanks again, buddy.
All of that is on ericfrancispizzapigout.com. Thank you, pal. See you on Saturday morning.
That's right, my man. We'll see you tomorrow. Cheers.
He's Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca as we start to wrap things up this hour. And this hour has been the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live Thoroughbred Racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.